A logo appears in bold slanting letters over a blue planet in space, Turner. Now sparks shoot out of a radio transmitter atop the revolving Earth. An RKO radio picture. Now, in black and white film, the legs of six men with canes stand on a polished floor. Words appear. Radio Pictures presents. A gentleman's feet tap dance into a pose. Fred Astaire as Jerry Travers. The hem of a ruffled skirt whirls at a woman's ankles. Ginger Rogers as Dale Tremont. As the two spin together in a dance, a title appears over a tall, flat-crowned hat of black silk. In Top Hat. This film is described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service, WGBH. Described by Paula Broussard and Carrie Dennehy. Read by Miles Neff. Major funding provided by the U.S. Department of Education. For more about DVS, call toll-free 1-800-333-1203 or visit our website at wgbh.org/DVS. More titles with Edward Everett Horton, Eric Rhodes, Eric Bloor, and Helen Broderick. Lyrics and music by Irving Berlin, directed by Mark Sandrich. A Panderas Berman production. Screenplay by Dwight Taylor and Alan Scott. Story by Dwight Taylor. Musical director Max Steiner. Gowns by Bernard Newman. Ensemble staged by Hermes Pan. Art director Van Ness Polglase. Set dressing by Thomas Little. Edited by William Hamilton. Copyright 1935 by RKO Radio Pictures, Inc. Our view pulls back from the top hat on the head of a middle-aged man. He stands in a group of six men, all in white ties and topcoats. Four of them walk up some steps in the entrance of a stately white facade. A doorman dressed in a coat with two rows of buttons down the front lets them in. A plaque reads, London Thackeray Club, founded 1864. Inside, another sign reads, silence must be observed in the club rooms. In a smoking lounge, tuxedoed men sit in overstuffed armchairs reading newspapers. An elderly waiter steps softly across the room carrying a silver tray with two port glasses on it. He sets the tray on a table between two men engrossed in their reading, then taps the glasses together. The men flip down their newspapers and glare at the waiter.
I beg your pardon.
As the waiter leaves, he passes another man seated nearby, whose lap and hands are the only parts of him that are visible. His newspaper hides the rest of him. Several men sit up, putting down their newspapers. The hidden man slowly peeks around his paper, revealing a thin, angular face and a pair of gentle eyes. He smiles at his disapproving peers, then looks around sheepishly. He pulls his newspaper back in front of his face. As the others go back to reading, the thin-faced man lets his paper fold down. He purses his lips in a bored sneer and checks his watch. Sitting up with his paper, he licks his finger and turns to the next page. The entire room full of men glare. The thin-faced man freezes, then gingerly folds his paper. Taking it by the edges, he straightens out a crimp, then settles into his chair. Meanwhile, a middle-aged fellow arrives at the front desk.
Good evening.
The two clerks trade a look. The middle-aged fellow bites his lip, then looks shamefaced over his shoulder.
Good evening.
Good evening, Mr. Hardwick.
He hands one clerk his hat and coat, then beckons to the other, who leans close.
Has Mr. Jerry Travers come in yet?
Yes, sir. He's been waiting for you the entire evening, sir.
The entire evening? Oh, dear, dear. Thanks.
Begging your pardon, sir, but is that the Mr. Travers? The well-known American gentleman, sir?
It is indeed. He's come over to star in my show. It's his first London appearance.
Your show, Mr. Hardwick?
Well, I'm producing it. I don't want any of the members here to know. I want to surprise them.
Oh, I'm sure they'll be surprised, Mr. Hardwick.
Hardwick smiles and does a double take at the clerk, then saunters toward the lounge. He spots Jerry across the room. The thin-faced American grins and rises as Hardwick approaches.
Hello, Jerry. I'm sorry I kept you waiting.
Jerry puts his finger to his lips, and the two men tiptoe out. Reaching a curtained archway, Jerry glances back into the room of reading men. He and Hardwick step onto the foyer's wood floor.
Jerry, There are a lot of things that I have to discuss, so I want you to come over to my hotel now.
Jerry nods and Hardwick walks off. Jerry faces the lounge, then launches into a tap step. The gentlemen stand and confer indignantly. Hardwick hurriedly ushers Jerry away. Later, they enter Hardwick's hotel room. Jerry suavely hangs his umbrella on his shoulder.
Jerry, I forgot to tell you, I want you to stay here for the night.
I'm sorry, I can't do it.
Oh, but you must, old man, really. You see, at the moment, I'm having a sort of a problem with my valet.
Oh, well, what do you want me to do, press your pants?
Oh, no, no, you couldn't. You wouldn't know how. No, you don't understand. It's my man, Bates. We've had a bit of a tiff.
Oh, how terrible. You didn't come to blows or anything?
Nothing like that. We're not speaking to each other. We've had rather a clash of taste. You see, Bates insists that a square tie is the only possible tie that can be worn with evening clothes. A square tie, imagine. I prefer the butterfly.
Well, I think Bates is right.
Bates is never right.
Well, then why don't you fire him?
Well, that's a little difficult. I'm hoping against hope that the man will just disappear.
A portly bald man in a robe enters.
Family squabbles, but let's hope he'll approve of me.
Well, there's never any telling with Bates.
The portly man tries to take Hardwick's coat.
If you please.
Hardwick snubs him and walks off with the coat. The valet turns to Jerry.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
Allow us to introduce ourselves, sir. We are Bates, sir.
Oh, really?
We are Jerry Travers. Welcome to our manor.
Thank you, Bates. Thank you. It seems that I'm to stay here tonight. At least, that was the idea of our beloved impresario.
Whose idea, sir?
Mr. Hardwick's.
Oh, his idea.
Bates looks snootily at Hardwick, who glares back.
Well, welcome, anyhow.
Oh, thank you, Bates.
Oh, pardon, sir. But may we make a personal observation, sir?
Well, not too personal.
Oh, no, sir. It is merely that we feel impelled to compliment you, sir, upon your excellent taste in ties.
Bates turns his gaze on Hardwick, then walks off. Jerry smiles to himself, then gives Hardwick a friendly tap.
They like me. You never know.
Where on earth did you ever find them? Well, from the Salvation Army, as a matter of fact. I sent them a pair of very old shoes.
Oh, I see. And the shoes came back and Bates was in them.
And he's been wearing my good ones ever since.
Jerry lights a cigarette.
Oh, how's Madge feeling?
Oh, she's fine. Thanks, Jerry. The climate at the Lido has done her a lot of good.
Oh, that's fine. It's too bad she won't be able to be here for the opening tomorrow night.
Isn't it? She's heartbroken, really. However, she's expecting us to fly down to Italy for a weekend.
Fly down to Italy for a weekend? I can't. I haven't got any goggles.
Oh, my word, Jerry, you have to go. She's counting on us. You see, she's going to have a young friend visit her, and I suspect there's something in the air. You know Madge and her matchmaking proclivities.
Well, is she expecting me for a weekend or a wedding?
Well, can't tell. You know how wives are.
No, I don't. How are they?
Wives? Why, they always have a little scheme. Look here, young fellow, I think it's about time you found out for yourself.
Oh, you do, dear?
I certainly do.
No, thanks, Horace. In me, you see, a youth was completely on the loose. No ends, no yearnings, no strings, no connections, no ties to my affections. I'm fancy free and free for anything you fancy. No dates that can't be broken, no words that can't be spoken, especially when I am feeling romancy.
He ditches the cigarette.
Like Robin on a tree, like a sailor goes to sea, like an unwritten melody, I'm free, that's me. So bring on the big attraction, my decks are cleared for action, I'm fancy free, free for anything fancy.
He fixes two drinks.
No strings, no connections, no ties to my affections, I'm fancy free, free for anything fancy. No dates that can't be broken, no words that can't be spoken, especially when I am feeling romancy. Like Robin upon a tree, like a sailor that goes to sea, like an unwritten melody, I'm free, that's me. So bring on the big attraction, my decks are fit for action, I'm fancy free, I'm free for anything fancy.
His hand in one pocket, Jerry launches into a loose-legged tap routine on the parquet floor. His His rapid feet occasionally cross over each other, and his snappily swaying body pivots toward the couch where Hardwick watches. Now he twirls alongside a curved countertop and slaps the surface, accenting his footwork with his hands. Turning around and around, he winds his way back to the center of the room, then drags one foot in a graceful slide. As he dances, our view dips into the room below, where a blonde sits up in a satin-tufted bed. She looks angrily up at the ceiling and her eyebrow lifts. Back upstairs, Hardwick stands with his drink in hand. As he takes a step away from Jerry, the dancer surprises him with a playful stop from behind. Hardwick bristles, leans against the couch, and keeps an eye on Jerry. Now the woman below uses the phone.
Hello, this is Miss Tremont. I'd like to speak to the manager immediately.
In Hardwick's room, Jerry holds his arms out like wings and does fast toe flaps. He escorts Hardwick to the phone in a snappy strut.
Hello? Are you there? Who? Oh, the manager, yes. Well, I can't hear a word you're saying.
There's a young lady downstairs.
Oh, a young lady. Well, at this time of night? Oh, well, she can't come up here now. No. I'd better come down myself. Jerry, go right ahead. Young lady downstairs definitely wants to see me.
Aha!
As Hardwick leaves, Jerry keeps tapping. Downstairs, the blonde ties on a long satiny peignoir robe. A piece of the ceiling falls and she storms toward the door. Upstairs, Jerry gives an end table two light kicks as he dances, then lilts over to an oval mirror. He looks at his reflection and cringes. In the hallway, Hardwick steps onto the elevator just as the blonde comes up the stairs. She follows the sound of the dancing. Now, Jerry bumps into a tall pedestal with a large figurine on it. Jerry catches the sculpture, then dances around with it in his arms. In the hall, Ms. Tremont lifts her fist to the door. Jerry smiles at the figurine, wiggling his hips as he dances in a circle. Ms. Tremont enters. She glares at Jerry, who freezes, then smiles.
Hello.
She eyes the figurine in his arms, and he places it back on the pedestal.
Won't you come in? I'm awfully glad you dropped in.
I dropped up from the room below where I've been trying to get some sleep.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize I was disturbing you. You see, every once in a while, I suddenly find myself dancing.
Oh, I suppose it's some kind of an affliction.
Yes, it's an affliction. Symbiotis dance.
And it only occurs at this time of night.
Yes. It only occurs at this time of night. As a matter of fact, I really shouldn't be left alone.
Yes, I can see that. You probably should have a couple of guards.
Jerry follows her into the hallway.
I think you're very unkind to make fun of me.
Oh, I'm sorry.
She continues toward the staircase.
I wish you wouldn't leave.
Why not?
I think I feel an attack coming on.
He springs into a fast time step.
There it is.
Ms. Tremont smirks.
So I see.
There's only one thing that'll stop me.
Oh, you must tell me what it is.
My nurses always put their arms around me.
He sneaks a sidelong glance at her as he dances.
Well, I'll call the house detective and tell him to put his arms around you.
As she heads down the stairs, Jerry slows to a halt. He leans on the handrail and stares down after her.
Good night.
Jerry smiles, then takes a few leisurely steps down the hall. Pulling out a slim silver case, he leans against a wall, takes out a cigarette, and lights it. He flings the match into a tall cylinder ashtray of steel, then freezes in thought. He picks the match out of the sand that fills it, then hoists the ashtray up under his arm. As Jerry carries it, Hardwick steps from the elevator behind him.
Oh, Jerry! Well, what are you doing here? What are you carrying that for?
Who was the young lady?
What young lady? Oh, that call wasn't for me. It was for you. Somebody has registered a complaint.
I know. I've just seen the complaint, and she's lovely. She's delightful. She's charming. And she wants to sleep.
Oh, she does.
So, and I'm going to help her. And you're going to help me. Take this.
He gives Hardwick the ashtray.
No. Bring it in here and guard it with your life.
Well, what are you going to do?
Never mind.
Downstairs, Miss Tremont sits on her bed, smiling. She turns off the lights, lies down, and pulls up the satiny comforter. Upstairs, Hardwick faces Jerry, still holding the ashtray of sand.
Look here, what's the idea?
The young lady downstairs wants to sleep.
So you told me.
Well, I've appointed myself her official sandman.
Jerry sprinkles sand on the floor.
But Jerry...
Jerry puts his fingers to his lips and dances lightly on the sandy floor. As he sprinkles more sand, he glides elegantly over the gritty surface. Crouching down, he brushes the sand rhythmically with his palm. Downstairs, Ms. Tremont lifts her head from her pillow and smiles as she hears Jerry's sand dance. Upstairs, Jerry swivels into smooth, slow half turns. Hardwick watches him from the nearby couch. Now Jerry rotates on his feet one at a time. His polished black shoes gleam brightly against the dull sand. Hardwick dozes off. As his eyelids droop, Jerry bounces on his feet, then wings out of a turn like a figure skater. Ms. Tremont's eyes close heavily and she snuggles against her pillow. Now Jerry's arms stretch out in a yawn and his dance slows. He winds down in a series of turns and sinks sleepily into a chair. As he closes his eyes, his head settles into his palm and he crosses his outstretched legs. Morning. Jerry talks to a clerk in a flower shop.
What else have you got? I'm sorry, sir, but you've cleaned out the shop. Well, you better tell him to plant some more for tomorrow.
Jerry writes a card.
That all to go to Miss Dale Tremont, sir?
That's right.
The card reads, "From your silent admirer."
Her room number is 304.
Now Jerry spots a large horseshoe-shaped arrangement.
Ah, what's that?
Oh, that's for the opening of a butcher shop, sir.
Send that up, too.
But, sir, a horseshoe?
Why, yes. I may want to order a peach orchard tomorrow.
What's the number of your room, sir?
Oh, just charge it to Horace Hardwick, room 404.
Yes, sir.
The florist jots on a pad, then raises an eyebrow at his assistant.
I wonder what Mr. Bedeen is going to say about this.
What can he say?
Well, she's been sending her flowers daily ever since they came here. And, entre nous, the desk clerk has intimated that Mr. Bedeen provides Miss Tremont with all the niceties, including her clothes.
Really?
And her niceties are very nice.
In the lobby, Dale exits an elevator in riding clothes. Jerry greets her.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I do hope you slept well last night.
I slept well enough, but not long enough.
I'm sorry. I was hoping there was something I could do to square myself.
Oh, that's quite all right.
I thought perhaps I could drive you to the stables.
Oh, no, thank you. I have a hansom cab waiting for me outside.
With a horse in front of it?
Yes. You see, the stable people always use them. They feel the horse is coming back.
Well, where's he been?
Dale rolls her eyes and walks off. Jerry smiles, then throws a quick look in the opposite direction. Now, at the front desk.
We're leaving tonight. Has Mr. Bedeen made arrangements?
Oh, yes, Miss Tremont. He's ordered your baggage to be picked up at 7 o'clock.
Thank you.
Dale walks to the lobby door, where a horse-drawn hansom cab waits. A doorman helps her into the passenger compartment, and he signals the driver, who sits on a raised platform behind the cab. He flicks the reins, and the horse trots off down the London street, past several double-decker buses. Using her riding crop, Dale opens a hatch in the roof of the cab.
Driver?
Yes, miss?
Can't you go any faster than this?
Lord love a duck, miss, I can, but I'm not allowed to leave the horse.
Dale rolls her eyes and looks toward the roof.
I meant the horse, of course.
Jerry drives the cab.
Well, it's like this, miss. You see, the horse is kind of tired today on account of having won the Grand National Friday.
Are you trying to tell me that this is a racehorse?
Yes, miss. And I've got his pedigree, too. As a matter of fact, his sire was man of war.
Well, who was his dam?
I beg your pardon, miss.
I said, who was his dam?
Oh, I don't know, miss. He didn't give it.
Dale shuts the hatch and glances up with an annoyed look. As Jerry works the reins, the hansom cab picks up speed. Jerry taps his feet on the floor. Dale looks around the compartment, then up at the roof. As she pushes open the roof hatch, Jerry peers down at her and smiles.
Peek-a-boo.
Stop this cab at once.
I don't know how. I've never handled anything more complicated than a Duesenberg.
He eyes the horse.
Take it easy, Mavis.
Well, what are we going to do?
In dealing with a girl or horse, one just lets nature take its course.
She shuts the hatch. Jostling in the cab, Dale grins, her shoulders lift in a giggle. Up above, Jerry clenches his teeth as he pulls on the reins. Later in the country, the hansom cab approaches a building surrounded by lush trees and shrubbery. A sign over the entrance reads, Belcher Riding Academy. Jerry stops the cab, hops down, and opens the door for Dale.
There we are, miss. I told you the horse would bring you to the right place.
What is this strange power you have over horses?
Horsepower. Don't I even get any thanks?
She drops a coin in his open palm. He stares at it.
Buy yourself a new hat.
Jerry watches Dale go, his brow shaded by the brim of a top hat. Now, three horseback riders trot down a sunny lane bordered by a wooden fence. Dale pulls ahead of the other two and gallops peacefully along. Looking up at the sky, she stops her horse. Gray clouds quickly fill the sky. Dale urges on her horse with her riding crop. As rain starts to pour down, jagged bolts of lightning streak across the sky. Dale rides through the pouring rain up to a large ornate gazebo. She ties her horse to a nearby tree and hurries under the roof. As she stands at the edge of the octagonal floor, brushing herself off, Jerry pulls up in the hansom cab. A large umbrella shields his head from the rain.
Cab, miss?
Dale turns her back to him.
Cab, miss? Cab, miss?
Jerry sets down the reins and removes the umbrella from its stand. Holding the umbrella high, he gets down from the cab and skips up the muddy path to the gazebo. He wipes his feet on the steps, then leans forward on one knee. Dale faces away from him by a row of lyre-shaped music stands.
May I rescue you?
No, thank you. I prefer being in distress.
Jerry tosses the umbrella aside and enters the gazebo. He takes off his caped overcoat.
Charming little spot you have here. When does the concert start?
Just as soon as you and the rain stop.
Oh, now, please. You wouldn't like to be just a little bit more friendly, would you?
Why should I? I don't know you from Adam.
Maybe it's the way I'm dressed.
Dale rushes into Jerry's arms, then backs away.
Are you afraid of thunder?
Oh, no. Just the noise.
You know what thunder is, don't you?
Of course. It's, something about the air.
No. When a clumsy cloud from here meets a fluffy little cloud from there, he billows towards her. She scurries away, and he scuds right up to her.
He sits beside Dale.
She cries a little, and there you have your shower. He comforts her. They spark. That's the lightning. They kiss. Thunder.
Dale seizes with fright, then relaxes. Jerry smiles.
The weather is frightening. The thunder and lightning seem to be having their way. But as far as I'm concerned, it's a lovely day. The turn in the weather will keep us together, so I can honestly say that as far as I'm concerned, it's a lovely day. And everything's okay. Isn't this a lovely day to be caught in the rain?
Dale peeks at Jerry out the corners of her eyes.
You were going on your way, now you've got to remain. Just as you were going, leaving me all at sea. The clouds broke, they broke, and oh, what a break for me. I can see the sun up high, though we're caught in a storm. I can see where you and I could be cozy and warm. Let the rain pitter-patter, but it really doesn't matter if the skies are gray. Long as I can be with you, it's a lovely day.
Jerry strolls around and whistles. Dale puts down her riding crop and she whistles. She rises from her seat and follows close behind him. At his side, Dale copies Jerry's movements as he casually shuffles around the gazebo with his hands in his pockets. As they finish their stroll, Jerry does a tapping spin. Dale mimics him, then walks away nonchalantly. She sneaks in some extra footwork. Jerry's gaze darts to her feet, and he fingers his chin. Now they tap in unison. They tap their feet with their arms hanging loosely at their sides, turn to face each other, and mirror each other's movements. As Jerry folds his arms across his chest, Dale copies, then mirrors Jerry as he sways left and right. Still facing each other, the dancers skip across the gazebo floor, swinging their arms out to each side. As they come back to center, they do a hopping spin and halt shoulder to shoulder. They step up onto a raised platform, then hop down and whirl in parallel paths towards the gazebo's front edge. Returning to the center of the gazebo, Jerry grabs Dale's hand and spins her like a top. She does the same to him. Now they come back face to face and do tilting hops to each side. Now the couple slide their feet across the floor as they step in a square pattern. Their gliding steps grow more dramatic, and they jump into the air with twirling kicks. They make eye contact, then tap in place. Dale freezes, and Jerry takes her into classic ballroom position. They pivot around in each other's arms. As the rain pours outside, Dale's curly hair bounces beneath her riding cap. Now the dancers playfully alternate between stopping and going. Jerry lifts Dale to his other side, then Dale does the same to Jerry. Both jump off the gazebo, stick their hands out in the rain, then sit cross-legged on the gazebo's edge. They shake hands. Later, Dale enters her hotel room with a wide grin. A man with a thin mustache points to the horseshoe flower arrangement.
Who is sending you this horse's shoe?
How cute! Alberto, I've seen him, I've talked to him, I've danced with him.
Him? Who is this him?
Who? Oh, his name is, Adam.
Well, you forget this Adam. You have promised to go with me to Italy. Your friend, Madge Hardwick, is awaiting you. And there you will dazzle the eyes in clothes designed by Alberto Bedini.
Alberto, I hope you don't mind, but I'm not going to the Lido.
Madre mia, what you say? Now, dear, listen to me. We have make agreement. Bedini designs the clothes which you wear among your friends, the smart people, so that they ask, who is so smart as to make these smart clothes? And you say, who? Who is so smart? Bedini. Forget these Adam. Bedini demands it.
He storms away.
Oh, Bedini does he? Alberto, up to the present, our relationship has been purely a business one. But if you start interfering in my personal affairs, I'll go back to America and live on the dole.
Oh, now, Dale, darling, I'm so sorry. I did not mean to interfere. Go ahead, fall in love with this Adam. Marry him. But as Mrs. Adam, what would you wear?
Fig leaves.
Bedini opens the door and a young bellhop holds out a small tray. Bedini takes a note off the tray and puts a coin in its place.
Thank you, sir.
Dale, a telegram for you.
Read it to me, please.
Come ahead, stop. Stop being a sap, stop. You can even bring Alberto, stop. My husband is stopping at your hotel, stop. When do you start, stop? I cannot understand who wrote this.
Sounds like Gertrude Stein.
Oh, no, it's from Madge Hardwick. She says her husband is stopping at this hotel. I'm gonna look you up.
Dale steps from her curtained boudoir.
Wonder what kind of man Madge married.
We sure to have influence. Let's be nice to him.
I'm afraid I'm going to be too busy being nice to somebody else.
Oh, Dale, you can't do this. All my life I have promised my dresses to take them to Italy, and you must be in them.
Sorry, Alberto, but I'm unpacking.
Bedini tightens his lips and walks to the door. He raises his peaked eyebrows.
Never again will I allow women to wear my dresses.
Dale watches him leave, then smiles to herself.
Isn't this a lovely day to be caught in the rain?
Later, at the front desk, Dale approaches in a glittering evening gown and sheer capelet.
Evening, Miss Fremont.
Good evening. Mr. Bedini and I have decided to stay.
Oh, I'm so glad, Miss. Then I'll cancel the order about the bag.
Thank you. Oh, by the way, is there a Mr. Hardwick stopping at this hotel?
Why, yes, Miss Fremont. Mr. Hardwick has room 404, just above you.
Dale's jaw drops.
Are you sure?
Definitely, Miss.
The clerk spots Hardwick dressed in a tuxedo.
As a matter of fact, there's Mr. Hardwick now, on the mezzanine. The gentleman with the briefcase in the cane.
Dale turns around just as Hardwick's distant form passes behind a chandelier. She heads across the lobby. Up on the mezzanine, Jerry approaches Hardwick. He also wears a tuxedo.
Horace. Oh, Horace, there's a telegram for you.
Oh, for me?
It's from Italy.
Italy? Oh, that's probably from Madge.
Yeah, and there's a message in your room to call the box office. Some trouble about the tickets or something.
Yes, trouble?
Yeah.
With the tickets? Oh, my word, Jerry, why, they wouldn't dare. Will you hold those things for me, please? Get a taxi, and I'll meet you downstairs.
All right.
As Hardwick shoves the telegram into his pocket, he hands Jerry his cane and briefcase, then rushes off. Dale spots Jerry coming down the mezzanine stairs in his tux and top hat. She storms off in the other direction. Jerry runs up to her as she waits for the elevator.
Cab, miss.
When a clumsy cloud meets a fluffy little cloud.
She slaps him and bustles into the elevator as it opens. Exiting passengers stare at Jerry, who drops the cane and briefcase. Now in Dale's room.
We're only trying to investigate matters, miss. We must protect our guests.
Well, she does not need your protection. I am too much protection enough.
There's nothing to investigate. Nothing matters. Nothing's happened. Will you please ask these gentlemen to go?
Upstairs.
You mean to sit there and tell me that that girl slapped your face in front of all those people for nothing?
What would you have done, sold tickets?
I mean, you did nothing and yet she slapped your face.
Now you're getting it.
Oh, I wish you'd be serious about this. One breath of scandal at this time will ruin our show. Why, I'd rather have had it happen to me than to you.
Oh, of course, if you enjoy that sort of thing.
I do, immensely. Don't be absurd.
Downstairs.
I hate men. I hate you. I hate all men.
Oh, but cara mia, you make a big mistake. I am no man. I am Bedini.
How could he have made love to me when he was married all the time? And to Madge, of all people.
So, this snake in the grass, this Adam, already he has eaten the apple?
Yes.
Bedini's eyes widen. He grabs Dale's arm.
I will kill him for you.
Have you finished packing?
Oh, but you do not understand.
Are we leaving or aren't we?
No, no, you cannot go back to America. We must go to the Lido.
But I can't face his wife.
And why not? Women are facing wives every day. And after all, you can't avoid seeing Madge sometime, can you?
I guess not.
Very well, then. Why not face the musicians now?
All right. Maybe she ought to know.
Back with Hardwick and Jerry.
You're sure you didn't forget yourself in the park?
Positive. If I ever forgot myself with that girl, I'd remember it.
Hardwick rushes to the door and opens it a crack. Two tuxedoed men greet him.
We're the management.
Oh, are we? Are you?
He closes the door.
Oh, dear, some more of these plural personalities.
His eyes widen and he reopens the door.
Just a moment.
He shuts it.
Jerry, get into my bedroom quick. No one must know you're here. If they ever suspect that you're in this, it'll be in every newspaper in an hour.
Hardwick watches Jerry leave, then opens the door all the way.
Well, 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 gentlemen, this is a pleasant surprise.
A small matter of great importance come to our attention, sir. I'm up here in your interest and to protect the hotel. We wish to avoid any scandal.
Scandal?
Yes, in connection with a certain slap in the face. The young lady refuses to divulge why she slapped you.
Oh, well, she didn't slap my face.
Well, who did she slap?
Why, it was who?
Bates arrives.
It was he, my valet.
Me, sir? Why, of course. Don't argue with me. How'd it happen?
Bates looks at the managers, then at Horace.
Oh, possibly we had been a little imprudent, sir.
Of course, you see, we had been a little imprudent.
But you said it wasn't you.
Oh, no, not Mr. Hardwick. Gentlemen, we take all the blame myself.
And there we are. There you are, you see. It was just a mistake. I'll take him to task personally.
Thank you, sir.
Not at all.
Good night.
Not at all.
Good night, sir.
Good night.
Hardwick shuts the door behind the managers and turns to his valet.
Bates, thank you. You know, really, you're an invaluable assistant.
Thank you, sir. Allow us.
Bates takes Hardwick's smoking jacket.
Your coat, sir?
Really? Oh, my. This is like old times, isn't it? You're helping me with my coat, I mean.
It's a pleasure we have missed, sir.
Thank you, Bates.
Thank you, sir. How's our lumbago this evening, sir?
It's so much better, Bates. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Bates starts to walk away.
Bates.
Yes, sir?
There's a crisis afoot. Couldn't we bury the hatchet? I mean, couldn't we forget all about the ties?
Sic transit gloriae mundi, sir.
Bates.
Yes, sir?
Mr. Travers is in trouble. He has practically put his foot right into a hornet's nest.
But hornet's nests grow on trees, sir.
Never mind that. We have got to do something.
What about rubbing it with butter, sir?
You blasted fool. You can't rub a girl with butter.
My sister got into a hornet's nest and we rubbed her with butter, sir.
That's the wrong treatment. You should have used mud. Never mind that. Mr. Travers is in trouble. Is liable to develop into a scandal that would involve all of us. Now, there is a young lady in the room below us.
Oh, I've seen her, sir.
I want you to find out all you can about her. Follow her wherever she goes and never take your eyes off her.
Never, sir?
Never. Whither she goes?
Thither I, sir. Right you are, sir. Whither or thither, sir.
Hardwick hands Bates a wad of bills.
Jerry?
Jerry returns to the living room.
What's happened? Well, it's all right. I fixed it. But, oh, my, things are getting involved. This is a deep-laid plot.
Nonsense. Why should this girl want to involve me?
Why? Why, for money, of course. Publicity. Anything to create a scandal. But don't worry. I'm going to see her, and I'm going to buy her off.
Oh, no, you're not. If anyone's going to buy her anything, I'm going to do it.
No, no, no. Oh, no. No, you stay right here. I'll clear this all up myself. It's probably some little thing you did, you see, carried away for the moment that offended her sense of decorum.
Well, if I did, I'm going right down and do it again. Goodbye, old boy.
Jerry leaves. At the hotel entrance, Bedini and Dale walk toward a cab. Dale turns and hesitates.
Come along, Calabria.
As they get in the motor car, Bates arrives, suitcase and umbrella in hand. He approaches the doorman.
Give me a taxi, quickly.
Yes. Taxi!
Another cab pulls up and Bates points ahead.
Follow that cab.
Now in Dale's suite.
Come in.
One of two maids stuff flowers into a trash bin. Jerry eyes the discarded flowers.
Where's the young lady that has this room?
She's gone, sir.
Gone?
Yes, sir.
Oh.
You don't mind if I get on with my work? Got to get these flowers out in the morning's rubbish.
That's all right. Go ahead. Go right ahead.
He tweaks his bow tie, then picks up the ribbon banner from the horseshoe flower arrangement.
Yeah.
He picks up a flower off the floor and gazes at it. Hardwick races up to him.
Jerry, do you realize we have less than an hour before the show opens? We've got to get out of here. Come on.
Jerry leaves with the flower. As one of the maids taps a vase on the edge of the trash bin, an orchestra conductor taps his baton. His score reads Top Hat Number. In the orchestra pit, the conductor's arms swing sharply. Meanwhile, in a dressing room, a valet makes sure that Jerry's carnation boutonniere is secure.
Women do strange things sometimes, don't they, George?
Yes.
As Jerry tosses aside Dale's flower, Hardwick runs in.
Jerry, that first act was simply marvelous.
Good.
Everybody's crazy about it. The critics are raving. And I've got some more good news for you.
Did you find out where she's gone?
She? Who? Oh, that girl. Oh, no, no. Jerry, please. The entire Thackeray Club is out in front.
You don't suppose my dancing has disturbed them?
Oh, I don't think so. They didn't say. Oh, of course not. It's perfectly all right here.
Second act beginners, Mr. Travers.
All right, thanks. I'll be there.
Oh, really? The second act here? Jerry, a lot of telegrams for you, and I'll be right back as soon as the act is over. Oh, my word. I never read my own telegram for Madge. Isn't it too bad she isn't here tonight? The biggest night in my life, and she isn't here to see it.
What's she say?
Oh, all kinds of good wishes for our success. Sorry that we can't fly down to Italy after the performance to meet her little friend.
Oh.
Says her little friend is in London, staying at my hotel. Her name is Tremont.
Tremont?
No, wait a minute.
See that.
Jerry grabs the telegram.
Horace, hire a plane right away. We're leaving for Italy the first thing in the morning.
1 minute, Mr. Travers.
Well, you can't do that. The seats are selling out for 4 months in advance.
How long does it take to fly there?
It takes 7 hours, and you've got to be back here Monday night for a performance.
Listen, we charter a plane for the weekend. We'll be back in time.
You're on, Mr. Travers. I will not jeopardize my position.
If you want this show to run 2 nights, get me a plane now.
What kind of a plane?
With wings.
On stage, 25 gentlemen dance in a line wearing top hats and tails. They handle canes as they move in unison. A backdrop shows a deco line drawing of the Eiffel Tower and a row of receding streetlights. The dancers part, and Jerry enters. In his own top hat and tails, he walks downstage center.
I just got an invitation through the mail.
Your presence requested this evening. It's formal. Top hat, white tie, and tails.
Nothing now could take the wind out of my sails. Cause I'm invited to step out this evening in top hat, white tie, and tails. Oh, I'm
the chorus leans left.
Putting on the top hat, tying up my white tie, brushing off my tails.
Now they lean to the right.
Dudin' up my shirt front, putting in the shirt studs, polishing my nails. I'm stepping out, my dear, to breathe an atmosphere that simply reeks with class. And I trust that you'll excuse my dust when I step on the gas. Or I'll be there, putting down my top hat, mussing up my white tie, dancing in the tails.
Jerry and the chorus strut stage right with their canes. They stop, sway back and forth, then strut stage left. The chorus turns upstage, then wheels around to watch Jerry, who goes into a solo. He bounces his cane off the floor, then snatches it out of the air with a swipe of his fist. Behind him, the chorus matches his jaunty rotation, then they lean forward on their canes. Jerry faces the chorus and they disperse. One line exits upstage, descending out of sight, while the remaining two rows pass in opposite directions toward the wings. Left alone, Jerry goes into a second solo and accents his footwork with taps of his cane. Now, with the toe of each shoe, he strikes the floor, crossing his legs behind in alternation. He swats the floor with his cane, which he gently flips and catches. Now, he turns his side to the audience and cycles the cane forward and back, all the while flapping lightly on his toes. Walking around the cane like the center of a wheel, he flap steps in a circle. Jerry accelerates faster and faster, adding more heel and toe action. He glides out of the circle and the stage lights dim. Jerry whirls into a pose with his cane under his arm and his hands out like a magician's. Still in shadows, he mimes meeting someone, takes off his hat and offers his hand in greeting. Now he springs back, flings his legs out high and squats low. Rising upright, Jerry twirls his cane like a drum major's baton, then sinks into a smooth crouch. He backsteps into a turn, crouches alertly, and watches center stage with mock caution. As he faces upstage, the chorus dancers emerge in front of the backdrop. They halt in a long line, and Jerry faces them. He holds up his cane like a rifle and takes aim. A dancer jolts as if shot. Another drops into a crouch. Jerry aims. With each foot tap gunshot, they fall into a crouch. Now Jerry aims his foot and bangs his cane. He downs half of the chorus, then aims backwards, putting his cane over his shoulder. Now he wields the cane like a machine gun, clicking his feet rapidly as he travels down the line. One dancer remains standing. Jerry fires at him. He dodges twice. Jerry grips the cane like an archer's bow and downs him with an imaginary arrow. Jerry throws up his cane and catches it. As the stage lights brighten, he does a quick pivot and spins behind the closing curtain. In the audience, Hardwick stands smiling at the rear of a loge box. He nudges several elderly men who applaud from their seats. Jerry walks on stage in front of the chorus dancers. The curtain closes behind him, and he bows. Jerry spots Hardwick and the others, takes aim with his cane, and spanks the floor with his toe. The men duck, then smile and clap. As Jerry bows and heads off stage, the conductor strikes up the band. Now, a small band plays on a balcony overlooking an elegant city canal. A gondola glides on the water by a busy cafe, and several bathers swim by. Two smartly dressed couples pass each other as they cross a footbridge. One couple steps toward a shining plaza where well-to-do tourists sit at small tables. Dale and Bedini step from an archway. Dale wears a sleeveless romper and a beach jacket.
I'll go look for Madge. See you later for cocktails.
Ben, you gotta be up.
As they part, a man watching Dale removes his sunglasses. It's Bates wearing a floppy-brimmed sailor's hat. He follows her. Now, across the canal, a stylish middle-aged woman sits alone at a cafe table. She watches as a boatsman takes a couple for a ride in a sleek, glossy motorboat. Dale and a waiter approach.
Madge!
Dale! When did you get down?
Just now.
Good.
Have something to drink. Guess on.
Per piacere, portate me un altro horse's neck.
An horse's neck? Si, signora.
It's grand seeing you.
And it's grand seeing you.
Now tell me, did my husband look you up?
Dale averts her gaze.
Yes.
Well, how did he impress you?
Oh, I think he's very fascinating.
Fascinating? You know, every once in a while, the effect Horace has on people surprises me.
He sort of surprised me, too.
Well, I'm glad you like him. He'll be here today.
Oh, no, he can't.
Madge's eyes widen.
What's the matter? Did he flirt with you?
He sent me a room full of flowers.
Well, that was sweet of him.
But, Madge, you don't understand. He chased me in the park.
Really? I didn't know Horace was capable of that much activity. Did he catch you?
Yes.
Good for Horace.
Madge, you shocked me.
Oh, Horace flirts with every attractive girl he meets. It doesn't mean anything.
Dale looks down and her shoulders droop.
Well, that's a funny way to take it.
My dear, when you're as old as I am, you take your men as you find them. If you can find them.
Now in the canal, Bates floats on his back by the ladies' table. He looks up at them with an inflated cushion under his neck. Now a seaplane flies through the air. Horace and Jerry sit on board.
And another thing, Jerry. The gossip at the hotel was that this man, Bedini, was supplying her with everything. Money, clothes, flowers.
No, Horace, you provided the flowers.
I never did anything. I didn't even know. Oh, don't be ridiculous. At any rate, as soon as we land, I'm going to see Madge and I'm going to find out from her just who and what this Tremont person is.
I only want to find out where.
Now, Jerry, I warn you. You don't realize the trouble that a designing woman can make for a man. Now, I know all about these things. I wouldn't tell this to anybody.
Horace looks around, then scoots close to Jerry.
I am the victim of a designing woman myself.
Surely you don't mean Madge.
Why, certainly. No, Madge. No, she doesn't know anything about it either. Her name is Violet. She's what the French call a passade.
Oh, I see. Little ships that pass in the night.
Ships? What? Oh, yes, 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 exactly. I met her at the birdhouse in the zoo. She was a very pretty little thing, and she seemed to be quite frightened.
Of the birds?
Yes, yes. You see, she led a very sheltered life. And it was the storks in particular that worried her. Mm-hmm. Well, I took her to a cinema. Then we had dinner, and then I took her to another cinema. And then I fear I forgot myself and let her kiss me.
The small seaplane flies through the clear sky. Now in Lido, Madge and Dale sit by the canal. Madge knits as Dale leafs distractedly through a magazine. Madge looks up from her needlework and notices the seaplane gliding low toward the water.
That must be his plane now. Come on.
No, I'd rather not.
Oh, come on. If I were you, I wouldn't miss this opportunity of seeing the early worm get the bird.
Now Horace and Jerry step from a boat to a canopied dock. Madge and Dale walk through a colonnade.
You know, Dale, I haven't told you the real reason I asked you down here.
Haven't you?
No. You know, I feel I've known you long enough to have the right to talk to you this way. In spite of the fact that all men are, males, there's no feeling so secure as having a good, reliable husband. I know.
Across the canal, Jerry steps off a bridge and spots Dale. He points to her.
Dale!
She gapes at him. Jerry starts forward and almost steps into the canal. As he turns and runs across the footbridge, Dale hurries inside the hotel lobby and races into an elevator. Jerry dashes up to Madge.
Jerry! Hello, Madge. I'll see you in a minute.
He rushes into the lobby and looks around. Madge approaches him.
Where'd Miss Tremont go?
Dale didn't tell me she'd met you.
Oh, yes, we've met.
Fine. I've arranged a little dinner party for all of us.
Let's eat now.
Oh, leave the child alone. She's a little upset about something.
Oh, really?
Yes. Tell me, how did Dale strike you?
He cradles his cheek.
Right between the eyes.
Good. where's Horace?
I left him struggling with the baggage.
The hotel's crowded, and you and Horace are going to have to bunk together tonight. Dale's with me.
Oh.
Did you get that room for my husband?
Si, senora. But I'm so sorry. Because of the carnival, the only thing available is the bridal suite.
The bridal suite?
How romantic. Thank you.
Outside, Bedini stops Horace.
Senor, you are Horace Hardwick?
Oh, thank you. I am. How do you do?
I am very displeased to meet you.
Really? Well, what do you mean, displeased?
Senor, I warn you, for men of your kind, this is not a healthy place.
Oh, my dear fellow, this is one of the healthiest spots in Europe. The air, the breeze, the flowers.
Oh, so it is funny tricks you are being. I warn you, never let your path crisscross mine again, or the heart seat.
Bedini clicks his heels, then storms away. Horace gulps and gives his chest a tender pat. Later, in the outdoor plaza, Madge approaches at the bridge as Horace descends.
Horace.
How do you do?
Madge.
He kisses her cheek.
Darling.
My, 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 your passion frightens me. Been practicing?
Yes, well, scarce. No. Madge, what do you think has happened to me?
I know, you got your first long trousers.
Madge, please, there's something down here that I have to investigate, and Jerry thinks that Well, maybe I better tell it anonymously.
You know, it sounds as if you were about to confess something, Horace.
Oh, does it? Well, what would I have to confess?
You really want to tell me about Dale Tremont, don't you?
Yes. But then again, no. You see, as a matter of fact, I haven't even met her yet.
Oh, you haven't met her?
No.
Well, if that's your story, Horace, you stick to it. I suppose you weren't in the park either.
In the park, my dear girl? It happened in the zoo. What? Oh, the zoo. Yeah, the zoo was in the park. Well, how'd you know I was there?
Oh, a little bird told me.
The stork? Madge, I think after the trip, I'd better clean up a bit.
Of course, I understand just how you feel.
Yes.
Horace runs back up the bridge stairs. Later, he enters the enormous honeymoon suite, its decor dripping with white curlicue motifs. Horace searches the front salon, then peeks into a vacant bedroom.
Jerry!
He rushes back into the salon as Jerry enters through a fanciful archway.
Jerry! What's the matter?
It's Madge.
Has she been chasing you?
No.
Horace plops into a chair.
Jerry, I think she's found out about Violet. And I just had my life threatened.
Now with Madge and Dale.
But what did he say? He just lied in a straightforward manner and said he'd never met you. Oh, he did he?
Mm-hmm. I told you he'd forget all about you.
Dale's eyes shift.
Well, I'll make him remember me in a manner he'll never forget.
She goes to the phone.
Has Horace been away from you lately for any length of time?
Well, he was alone on the continent last year.
As Madge lights a cigarette, Dale picks up the receiver.
Connect me with Mr. Hardwick's apartment, please. Madge, have you any objections if I scare your husband so that he'll never look at another woman?
Dale, no husband is ever too scared to look.
Now Jerry answers his phone.
Hello.
Oh, hello. Where are you?
Oh, so you do remember me. He remembers me all right. Are you alone?
Completely and desolately.
Fine, I'll be right up.
Jerry's smile fades and he gawks at the receiver. Frowning, Dale hangs up the phone. Jerry rushes into the bathroom where Horace takes a bath.
Horace, she's coming up.
She's coming up here? Oh, she can't do that. It isn't proper.
She wants to see me alone.
Alone? Jerry! What did I tell you? She wants to compromise you. Oh, rack your brains, please. Couldn't you have met that girl someplace else before?
Well, I could have met her in Moscow.
Ah, uh-huh. In Moscow. Well, you see?
But I've never been to Moscow.
Oh. Well, couldn't you have met her in Paris?
The last time I was in Paris, I was 10 years old.
Jerry! I don't think it's safe for you to see that girl alone.
Well, I don't think it'd be quite proper for you to receive her that way.
Now, Dale approaches the hotel room door. She hesitates before knocking. Jerry runs to the door, which is painted with a carnival reveler playing a banjo. Jerry opens the door.
Hello.
I know you'll think this a little unconventional of me, but I just couldn't wait to see you alone.
As she walks into the front room, Jerry furrows his brow at her, then follows.
I'm awfully glad you came up.
Oh, my darling.
She kisses his lips. Jerry's eyebrows lift.
Hello. How have you been?
I've been missing you terribly.
Well, I came down on the fastest plane I could get.
Oh, no, I meant before yesterday.
Before yesterday?
Why, yes, of course. Don't you remember?
Should I?
Have you forgotten what we've been to each other?
She looks away, smiling coyly.
Well, what we've been to each other.
Oh, I knew yesterday in the park when I was dancing in your arms, you remembered who I was.
Of course. Who are you?
Then you still don't remember.
She turns away with sad eyes.
Well, I can try to remember something.
How could you forget that funny little house? And the suspicious concierge? And that quaint little room?
Jerry's brow grows puzzled.
We used to have tea and muffins in front of the fireplace, watching the shadows leaping on the ceiling.
He works his jaw.
And those long walks down that twisty cobblestone street to the river. Oh, Paris is heavenly in the spring.
Dale gives him a sidelong glance. Jerry's brow furrows and the corner of his mouth lifts.
So that's where we met.
Yes, last year.
In Paris. Mm-hmm. Why, of course. It's all coming back to me now.
Is it?
Yes, but you weren't calling yourself Dale Tremont.
Wasn't I?
No, it was, Madeline. That was it. I called you Mab for short. You've put on a little weight, haven't you?
Dale checks her waist, and Jerry looks off dreamily.
Remember that night on the left bank? You had on that little blue dress I bought for you.
He peeks at her out the corner of his eye.
And to think that I almost forgot you. Tell me something. Do you still have that awful weakness for diamond bracelets?
Jerry nudges her with his elbow.
I suppose I do.
Well, make yourself comfortable, darling. I'll order some cocktails. A little later on, we'll have supper up here, just we two. It'll be like old times, won't it?
I think I'd better be going.
He grabs her wrist.
I'll let you go on one condition. Promise me, now that I've found you again, we can be to each other what we were in Paris.
She holds a handkerchief to her face and scurries out of the room. Horace peeks out from the bedroom, then rushes in.
There. You see? I was right. Of all the scheming, brazen creatures trying to pretend that she met you in Paris, do you realize that she's deliberately trying to trap you? Now, what are you going to do about it?
Marry her?
Jerry, this is no time for you to be funny.
All right, then you be funny. I'm going down and ask her to marry me right now.
Jerry, please, wait. Now, before you make a complete fool of yourself, promise me that you won't ask her until I find out from Madge more about her past.
All right, you find out all about her past, and I'll go down and plan her future.
Remember, that's a promise.
All right, it's a promise.
Now, Dale enters her hotel room and rubs her nose with the handkerchief. Madge approaches wearing a snug black satin evening gown.
Well, what happened? Did you scare him?
No. He scared me.
What did he do, make faces at you? You know, sometimes I get up in the morning and I take a good look at him and he frightens me, too.
He mistook me for someone called Madeline he'd met in Paris.
Oh, really?
Madge, do you think you ought to let him go away from you alone? I don't believe he was nearly so innocent in Paris as you seem to think.
My darling, you interest me. I must send him to China next year.
But, Madge, you don't seem to understand. I'm trying to tell you that I'm afraid that... that we're carrying this thing too far.
You know, I wonder if you've seen something in Horace that I've never seen.
Now in the honeymoon suite, Horace wears a tux and tails. He straightens his bow tie and opens the door to leave. As he steps out, Bedini happens by. Horace bolts back into the room. He locks the door behind him and presses his ear against it. In the hall, Bedini stares at the door, adjusts his cuff, then walks away. Now in a dining room, Dale and Madge sit at a table for four. On a dance floor beside them, formally dressed couples dance a light two-step. Dale wears a dress trimmed abundantly in full, fluffy ostrich feathers. As she plays with her napkin, Madge looks around.
I wonder what's keeping Horace.
Dale looks past Madge. Her mouth drops as Jerry enters the dining room.
What's the matter?
Madge looks over her shoulder.
I'm afraid I'm going to have a headache.
Oh, don't go. This is a meeting I've been planning a long time.
Jerry spots the ladies and heads over in his black tuxedo. Dale glares.
Good evening. It's nice to see you again, Miss Tremont.
She shoots him a nasty look.
You robbed me of the pleasure of introducing you two. You've already met.
Oh, yes, we've met. Last spring.
Dale looks down.
Well, I hope you see a lot of each other.
You know, Madge is a most understanding person. She seems to know instinctively the kind of girl that interests me. I don't know what I'd do without her.
Oh, that's sweet of you, darling. But you two run along and dance and don't give me another thought.
Dale looks at Jerry, then at Madge.
That's what I'm afraid of.
Dale gets up and Jerry dances onto the floor with her. As he grins at Dale, she fixes her heavy gaze on Madge.
I think Madge is a very brave person.
Yes, I have a tremendous admiration for her.
They continue dancing. Madge grins at Dale and waves her on. The svelte blonde gapes. Now Madge winks. Nibbling on bread, she motions for Dale to get closer to Jerry.
Well, if Madge doesn't care, I certainly don't.
Neither do I. All I know is that it's heaven. I'm in heaven, and my heart beats so that I can hardly speak, and I seem to find the happiness I seek when we're out together dancing cheek to cheek. Heaven, I'm in heaven, and the cares that hung around me through the week seem to vanish like a gambler's lucky streak when we're out together dancing cheek to cheek.
They pause beside a white pillar.
Oh, I love to climb a mountain and to reach the highest peak, but it doesn't thrill me half as much dancing cheek to cheek.
Dale smiles.
Oh, I love to go out fishing in a river or a creek,
But I don't enjoy it half as much as dancing cheek to cheek. Dance with me, I want my arm about you. The charm about you will carry me through to...
They dance.
Heaven, I'm in heaven. And my heart beats so that I can hardly speak. And I seem to find the happiness I seek when we're out together dancing cheek to cheek.
They dance over a small flat bridge to a semicircular terrace. Dale twirls out of his arms and the feathered layers of her dress float up and out. Jerry spins behind her, copying her movement. They twirl past each other several times, then reunite in front of a tall double-doored gate set in a low wall. Dale arches her back and Jerry dips her smoothly. Now Dale twirls around him and they stand side by side holding hands. Bobbing gracefully on tiptoe, they kick to the side, then step back and kick to the other. Jerry pulls Dale into a spin and her fluffy dress whirls out. They link arms and Jerry spins her out in front of him. As they come back together, he dips her once again while she arches her back. Now they dance beside each other and do a lilting soft shoe. Jerry holds her close and they twirl athletically across the terrace. As they halt, Dale leans back in his arms, making a diagonal from her pointed toe to her smooth neck. Now they separate and leap in the air. In unison, they plant one foot back, then slide their front legs in. They ease into a slow turn and hold their arms out, embracing the air. Now Jerry takes Dale's hand. He winds into her arm and drapes it over his shoulder. They return to ballroom position and step around in lively circles. Dale winds out from him, and they step to and fro in opposite directions. Now they spin forward. Jerry wraps his arm around Dale's waist from behind and leads her around the floor. The couple bounds toward the low wall. Jerry rejoins Dale and lifts her. Her legs fan out, arcing through the air. As she lands, they both drop briefly to one knee, then take a long step to the side. Dale twirls into a grand flourishing pose. Jerry brings her down from a fan-kicking lift and she dips way back in his arms. Jerry slowly brings Dale upright. They dance cheek to cheek toward the low wall. Easing out of a spin, Dale leans delicately against it. Jerry twirls beside her and leans in close. Dale stares breathlessly into Jerry's eyes, then looks away. Rubbing her hands together, she glances down, then back at Jerry. Jerry's smile fades as Dale steps away from him and pushes open the tall gate to a balcony. Under the night sky, she takes in a view of trees and a distant villa. Jerry approaches from behind, smiling. Dale keeps looking straight ahead.
Anna, why don't you tell me what this is all about? You know we never met in Paris.
I know. I'm afraid I haven't been quite fair with you. You see, I know who you are.
What difference does that make?
Oh, so that doesn't make any difference.
No, why should it? I don't know who you are, and I don't care.
Well, that's big of you. Well?
Well, what?
Aren't you now supposed to say, we should think only of what we mean to each other, that we're entitled to live our own lives?
I don't think I'd say it that way exactly. But aren't we?
Go on.
If it weren't for a promise I made in a moment of weakness, I would go on.
Oh, you made a promise. Well, that shouldn't make much difference to you.
That's right. Forget it. Marry me.
How could I have fallen in love with anyone as low as you?
She slaps him, then storms off. Jerry rubs his cheek and stares off dreamily.
She loves me.
Now, Dale hurriedly shoves a jewelry box and several handkerchiefs into a trunk.
What are you doing?
Packing. I'm leaving. Madge, you don't know what a mess we've got into.
Why, what's the matter?
Your husband. He wants to divorce you and marry me.
I see. He wants to do right by both of us. Did he mention any settlement?
No.
That'll come later. He'll probably want me to pay myself alimony. Oh, now listen, Dale. I don't want you to go. That won't solve anything.
I can't stay here under the circumstances.
Here or there, as long as you remain a spinster, you're fair game for any philandering male. You know, what you really should have is a husband you can call your own. Seriously, I mean it.
But what are we going to do about your husband?
Oh, don't worry, dear. I'll do it.
Madge pats Dale's hand and walks to the front room.
Come in.
Horace enters, smiling brightly.
Darling.
Madge shuts the bedroom doors, folds her arms, and steps toward him. Horace's eyes widen, and he recoils. Later, he sits with a black eye.
All I said was darling, and she smacked me. Jerry, how does it look? Tell me frankly.
It looks like a sunrise by Maxfield Parish.
Horace looks in a hand mirror.
Oh, Jerry, that's terrible. I can't go around now like this.
Put a piece of raw steak on it. That'll take the swelling down.
It would? Yeah. A steak?
Sure.
Bates!
The valet enters.
Yes, sir?
Order a steak.
A steak. Very good, sir.
He leaves.
You know, Jerry, I can't imagine what's got into Madge recently. She's never hit me before.
Maybe she just never thought of it before.
Horace does a double take. Now with Bates.
Room service? Yes, this is the bridal suite. Yes, will you please set up a nice, juicy steak? I beg your pardon? Oh, yes, mashed potatoes and carrots and spinach. Oh, yes, and of course, coffee.
Later, Bates and a waiter deliver a prepared steak to Horace, wheeling it in on a cart.
As soon as you get your eye fixed, we'll go down and see Matt.
Where'd you want it, sir?
What, Bates?
The steak, sir.
On my eye.
Bates does a double take.
On your eye, sir?
Oh, my word, why do I always have to say things twice? On my eye means on my eye, doesn't it?
I beg your pardon, sir.
Oh, no.
Bates looks at the waiter and shrugs.
Jerry, you see what I'm up against. The man has a sluggish brain, always wants to debate things. First it's a maniac, and then it's Madge, and now it's Bates. I give you my word, if anything else happens, I'll go insane.
As Bates approaches with the steak, Horace shuts his eyes. Bates slaps the meat on his face. Horace sits up and removes the steak from his eye. He gapes at Jerry, who points at it and smiles. Now, in her feathery gown, Dale steps onto the terrace balcony wearing a satin cape over her shoulder. She leans against one of the tall doors and takes a deep breath. Bedini approaches from behind.
Carissima, we are a grand success. Every woman she's saying this dress is wonderful. This Bedini is the tops. Oh, I'm so happy.
Dale gives him a faint smile.
Oh, but no, cara mia. Tis not the dress, tis not Bedini. It is you who wears it.
Thank you, Alberto.
Uh-huh. What is it? Is Adam again? Is Gardener of Eden? He has made you sad?
It's just that I'm all mixed up, that's all.
Oh, why worry about this man?
I think I'm worrying more about his wife.
Poverina. Bedini does not like to see you so sad.
Alberto, you seem to be the only one left I can turn to.
He puts his arm around her.
Dale, why don't you marry Bedini? He'll make you happy. Why not? I'm rich, and I'm pretty, and then this hard week will leave you alone.
Dale looks down, then fixes her drooping gaze on Bedini.
I'll marry you if you really want me to. But let's do it right away.
Oh, Angela mia.
As they rush off the balcony, Bates steps into view. His eyes shift and he follows them. Now Jerry and Horace step off an elevator. Horace wears sunglasses.
Oh, I know. Well, first of all, we'll get you straightened out, and then I'll ask Madge about Dale.
The manager approaches.
Mr. Hardwick, dear sir, one of our guests has informed us he's to be married this evening. We wondered if you would give up your bridal suite.
Give it up? Oh, why, we,
Well, we've hardly settled in it yet, have we, Angel?
No, and all our clothes, please. Of course you may have it.
Thank you, dear sir. I shall remove you elsewhere.
The manager bows and leaves.
Come on, dear sir. Brace up. Madge has merely heard something about this violent girl. We know it isn't the truth. You tell her yourself. That's all she's waiting for.
I know. That's what I'm afraid of.
Always remember that the truth has never hurt any man.
Jerry, you're right.
Horace marches up to a door.
And anyway, if it does, I'll go to the hospital with you.
The door opens. As Madge steps out, Horace runs to the elevator.
Horace! What is this, Halloween?
Madge, Horace has a little confession to make.
Well, I've been waiting for this for some time. Come right in and get it off your chest.
Jerry talks to Horace out the side of his mouth.
Better take your glasses off.
Horace complies, and they enter the room.
Sit down.
Madge sits across from Horace on a settee, and Jerry stands between them. Madge folds her arms and eyes her husband.
Well?
Huh? Oh, well.
Horace looks to Jerry.
You see, when Horace was in London, he met a certain young lady.
And Madge, you must have had an inkling of this, or...
Or you wouldn't be telling me now.
Never. What? Well, certainly.
Jerry sits.
What Horace means to say is that he'd like to make a clean breast of the whole thing.
Before I find out the truth.
Exactly. Madge, this girl was absolutely... What? Oh, dear, I'm all mixed. Where am I?
The men stand as Madge gets up to answer the phone.
Hello?
Madge, darling. I wanted to call and tell you I just got married.
You got what? I'm sorry, dear, I can't hear you. It sounds just as if you said you got married.
I did.
Well, where are you now? Going to the bridal suite.
Jerry lights a cigarette.
Very proper place for a bride and groom, isn't it?
Well, darling, I must compliment you on your speedy work, but who on earth did you find to marry you so quickly? Alberto? Oh, you'd better hang up, Dale, dear. I think I'm going to faint.
Dale? What was that? Dale Tremont married?
Yes, to that dressmaker.
Good.
Good? What'd you have to do with this?
It's all his fault.
My fault?
Yes, she told me how you chased her in the park and she slapped your face.
Yes, but I'm the one she slapped.
Jerry gapes in thought.
She's been mistaking me for Horace all this time.
No wonder she thought Horace was fascinating.
No wonder. I resent that.
Madge, where is she now?
On her way to the bridal suite.
Bridal suite?
Jerry pulls a key out of his trouser pocket and smiles as he tosses it. He rushes to the door.
I'll see you later.
But, Jerry, you can't do a thing like that. It isn't fair.
All is fair in love and war, and this is revolution.
Now the manager shows Bedini the honeymoon suite.
Oh, yes, it's very pretty.
Thank you, dear sir. We are very proud of our bridal arrangements. Is anything else, sir?
Yes, would you please ask my wife to join me here?
It is a pleasure, dear sir.
Bocche di niente.
The manager leaves, and Bedini strolls into the bedroom. A large chandelier hangs over a circular bed set into an alcove. Floor-to-ceiling curtains are draped on either side of the nook. As Bedini looks around, Jerry appears from behind a curtain and waves to him.
Hi.
Bedini scowls as Jerry plops down on the bed and reads a magazine.
What are you doing here?
What are you doing here?
Yes, but this is my room.
Yes, but this is my room.
So? But I have the key.
So? But I have the key.
But I am Bedini.
You got me there, pal.
We will see who is the owner of this room.
Bedini rushes out of the suite. Jerry lags behind, sauntering into the front salon. He snickers as he watches Bedini go. With an amused smile, Jerry taps his chin, then looks upward, concentrating. As he turns to go, Horace arrives.
Why, Jerry, you shouldn't be in here. It isn't cricket.
No, Horace, and it isn't tiddlywinks either.
Jerry looks at the ceiling again and dashes off. Horace looks up too, then runs after him. Now, Bedini exits the elevator and approaches the hotel manager.
Signor, there is a man in my bed.
Come, un uomo nel suo letto?
Ma certo!
Upstairs, a maid lets Jerry and Horace into a room.
It's too bad he's not here yet. Well, I'll just wait until my uncle returns.
He tips the maid.
Signor.
Thank you.
Why, Jerry, I didn't know that you had an uncle here.
Didn't you know?
No.
Well, I haven't. But this room is just above the bridal suite.
In the bridal suite, Bedini approaches the manager carrying a fencer's sword.
He's not here, signore. If he returns, you will call us.
If he returns, I will kill him. We Bedini have the motto, for the woman, the kiss, for the man, the sword.
Oh, ma prego, signore, non si comprometta.
Sì, ma bisogna fare qualche cosa.
As the manager and his employees leave, Bedini strides across the room and places his sword beside two others in a long case. With a stern and steady gaze, he removes his tuxedo jacket. Dale, wearing a Mandarin-style silk robe, enters from a door across the salon. Bedini looks in a full-length mirror as he dons a bathrobe over his clothing.
Oh, Alberto, you're a fine fellow. Oh, Alberto Bedini, I'm so glad you're not skinny.
He turns away from the mirror and grins as he spots his bride. They meet in the middle of the salon.
Oh, Dale, you are lovely. Like a flower I am afraid to crush.
Don't be afraid.
They embrace. Their gazes shoot toward the ceiling. In the room above, Jerry dances next to Horace.
Alberto, make him stop.
Who is it? You know?
Yes, it's Horace.
Horace Hardwick, that interloper. I'll stop him.
Bedini rushes out of the salon and returns with his sword. He heads for the door, then turns back to Dale.
For the man, the sword.
He marches out, and Dale looks at the ceiling with a satisfied smirk. Her eyes widen, and she gapes. She rushes to the phone and picks up the receiver.
Mrs. Hardwick's apartment, please.
Upstairs, Jerry continues tapping as he opens the door and peeks down the hall. He spots Bedini approaching with his blade.
He's coming.
Oh, is he?
You keep this up and hold him here as long as you can.
Yeah, I will.
Jerry disappears into an adjoining room as Horace stands by the open door and begins stomping his feet. He looks down at his footwork, then holds his head up proudly as Jerry climbs out a window. Meanwhile, Dale talks on the phone.
Madge, you'd better come over and rescue Horace. Alberto's gone after him with the sword.
Now, as Horace taps, Bedini strides through the doorway. Horace glances at him casually, then does a double take. He continues stomping as he backs away from Bedini and sinks into a chair.
Salute!
Why, yes, of course.
Horace's nervous smile fades as Bedini strikes a fencing stance. The designer steps closer, pointing the sword at Horace. Now Jerry enters the bridal suite.
I'm sorry to break in like this, but I simply had to see you.
Will you please stop annoying me?
But you've been mistaken about me.
I'm afraid I haven't.
All right, then. I'll stay right here, and there'll be a scene with your husband.
He'll be furious if he finds you here.
Well, then please come with me for a few minutes. I've simply got to talk to you.
She glances at the ceiling, and they turn to go. Now with Horace.
And so you see, my dear chap, I am definitely the wrong person.
But you are Horace Hardwick, no?
Yes, of course I'm Horace Hardwick.
Then you are not the wrong person. Prepare!
As Bedini points the thin sword at Horace's chest, Madge enters. Bedini relaxes.
Don't mind me, I just came up to see the fun.
Madge, explain to this maniac that he's making a very serious mistake.
Well, he may be making a mistake, but it's not serious. Go right ahead, Alberto.
No, I cannot kill him before a lady.
Well, if you're going to pull out on us, Alberta, maybe it's best that you don't kill him. I may want that pleasure myself someday.
Now, Dale and Jerry ride in a gondola.
But why didn't you tell me who you were?
After all, I mean, you never gave me very much of a chance.
At the stern, the gondolier guides the boat with a long oar. It's Bates. The oar gets stuck, and Bates clings to it as the boat moves on.
Clever.
The oar breaks, and Bates falls into the canal. Dale and Jerry drift onward.
Help somebody!
Meanwhile...
Oh, I'm so sorry. I really did not want to kill you. You must forgive me.
I forgive you.
Oh!
Bedini kisses Horace's cheeks.
Go right ahead, boys. Don't mind me.
Oh, Signora.
He reaches for Madge.
Not tonight, Albert, or some other time when I'm feeling stronger.
Oh, thank you.
Bates arrives.
Pardon me, sir. What is it? What's the matter? What have you been doing? What's the matter? What is it?
Pardon me, sir, but Mr. Travers and Miss Tremont, sir, they're drifting out to the bay in a gondola, sir.
Well, there. That ought to make you feel pretty small, accusing me. He's kidnapped her.
Kidnapped her? You are in this plot. You are cahooting with him.
I've had just about...
Children, if Dale and Jerry are drifting out to sea, don't you think the best thing we could do is to go out and rescue them?
Oh, yeah. Come on.
Isn't it marvelous to have some brains? I'm always so helpless. Don't answer me like that. Do something.
Later in a motorboat, Bedini, Madge, and Horace pull alongside a gondola.
Jerry?
That isn't Jerry. That's right. Make a fool of yourself.
There's no mind to look, is there?
Now, the three float on the open sea in heavy fog. Bedini checks the motor.
I think there is no gas left. Oh, my word, no petrol? Perhaps I'd better look at the engine. Where is it?
They may have hidden it up there under the hood.
Now, outside the hotel, Dale and Jerry return the gondola.
Well, this is the first time I've ever had to walk back from a boat ride.
He chains the boat to a pole and starts to follow Dale into the hotel.
Oh, Jerry, you mustn't come with me. I'd rather talk to Alberto alone.
Alberto will have to get accustomed to talking in front of me.
No, seriously, I'd rather you wouldn't, please.
When am I going to see you again?
I don't know.
As she walks away, Bates approaches in his gondolier outfit.
Travers, Mr. Travers, they went after you, said look for you, sir, in a motorboat.
Mr. Bedini, too?
Yes, sir, all three of them, but they won't be back this evening, sir. We took the precaution of removing the gasoline, sir.
Oh, thank you, Bates. Thank you.
Yes. Dale!
Jerry rushes off. As Bates watches him go, a policeman with a thick mustache and a bicorn hat approaches from behind.
Lei è in arresto.
What is it, my good man?
Perché lei vestito così?
Oh, these, yes. I'm masquerading.
The officer stares blankly at him.
Masquerading? Don't you understand English?
Inglese?
No, signore.
Oh, you don't understand English? Oh, well. I've been waiting for an opportunity like this since my childhood. You frozen-faced flat-foot.
Grazie, signore.
And grazie to you if it comes to that, you stultified shrimp.
Grazie, signore.
Can I help it if you look like a mildewed donkey?
Grazie, signore.
Oh, I'm adoring this. And grazie to you, since you insist. You see, I happen to be breaking the law. I admit it wholeheartedly, but of course you would never know that, you fish-faced nincompoop.
Grazie, signore.
Good night.
Un momento.
The officer takes out a small book, flips a few pages, and reads.
I arrest you for masquerading as a gondolier. I further charge you with insulting an officer with vile names according to Rule 3, Section 3 of the law dealing with delinquents.
Grazie.
Now, two dolls in the likeness of a bride and groom adorn a wedding cake on a table. Jerry pulls a chair out for Dale, and a waiter approaches.
Beg pardon, signore. The carnival is beginning. Shall I serve now, or will you wait for the groom?
I don't think the groom would be here tonight.
Very good, sir.
Very good. It's perfect.
I still feel a little guilty being here with you while Alberto's out looking for us.
Come on, let's eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we have to face it.
A small fleet of decorated gondolas winds past the dining terrace. Several couples gallivant across the footbridge onto the shining hotel plaza, where dozens more arrive from various directions. Four lines of couples assemble parallel to one another, forming a square grid in the middle of the plaza. They all do a synchronized dance. The women wear identical frill-trimmed dresses, and the men wear matching bolero jackets. The men twirl their female companions simultaneously. Seen from above, the dancers form three long lines, with the men as the outer two and the women as the middle line. As the ladies step consecutively to their partners on either side, their line splits like an opening zipper. Now some of the newly formed couples move back to the middle. They form two lines in between the existing lines. The men in the outer lines twirl their ladies as the couples in the middle stretch out their arms diagonally. Dale and Jerry watch.
Venetian sons and daughters are strumming a new tune upon their guitar. It was written by a Latin, a gondolier who sat in his home out in Brooklyn and gazed at the stars. He sent his melody across the sea to Italy, and we know they wrote some words to fit that catchy bit and christened it the Piccolino. And we know that it's the reason why everyone this season is humming and strumming a new melody. Come to the casino and hear them play the Piccolino. Dance with your bambino to the strains of the catchy Piccolino. Drink your glass of vino, and when you've had your plate of scallopino, make them play the Piccolino, the catchy Piccolino, and dance to the strains of that new melody. The Piccolino.
Now a woman's skirt lifts, revealing her smooth calves, and several dancing couples beyond.
I, the Adriatic waters, Venetian sons and daughters, are strumming a new tune upon their guitar.
Now on a circular island platform, the men twirl their ladies. Their reflections show in the tranquil canal water. Back on the plaza, couples form a circle. The men stand still as the women twirl out from them, each trailing a taut ribbon attached to her partner. The resulting formation looks like a sun with many rays. They make other designs. A nine-pointed star becomes a shape like a pinwheel. Now, couples pair up, then wind apart to make a daisy design with their connected ribbons. Each man lifts his lady in an arc over the connecting ribbon. Now, the couples form two lines. The women, still attached to their men by ribbons, twirl out from them, stretching the ribbons taut. The groups look like two ladders lying parallel. Now the women spin back to their men as the ribbons wind around their waists. Again, they pivot away, this time forming six lines connected by the ribbons. Later, the couples join in classic ballroom position once again and step lively in circular formations. The circle breaks into four curved lines, which snake to the perimeter of the plaza. Now, Dale and Jerry tap spiritedly onto the plaza. Their feet spin around each other as they stomp and shuffle. Dale's sparkling dress bells out from her knees, and the tails of Jerry's black coat flap with his movements. Reaching the center of the plaza, they break away from their ballroom stance and twirl. Now they unite and glide gracefully in each other's arms. In unison, they each point a toe to the side occasionally. With an arm wrapped around Dale, Jerry twirls her around and she lightly arches back. Her blonde curls bounce as she flips her head with each turn. Jerry spins Dale out, then pulls her back. Holding hands, they tap spryly around the plaza. Now they face each other closely and scoot in a straight line, ending with a spin. They repeat the phrase four times, tracing a square in the plaza's center. Still facing each other, they cross one foot in front of the other, swing their arms, and clap in time with the music. They mirror each other as they turn to the left, then the right. Returning to ballroom position, they each look back at their feet as they kick up their heels. Now, joining left hands, they face each other with their free hands on their hips and give skipping kicks. Jerry pulls Dale next to him and they dance side by side. Again, they join left hands and face each other in a sprightly jig-like dance. They give each other a quick, courtly bow. Now they glide to the edge of the plaza, spin into their chairs, and raise their champagne glasses in the air. Now two men help Madge out of a fishing boat. Bedini sneezes. The men help him out. Still wearing his bathrobe and clutching his sword, he turns to Madge.
The hour of reckoning is at hand. Bedini is about to settle his accounts.
He pulls up the collar on his robe and storms off.
Skipper.
Sí, senor.
Will you tell my husband we're here?
She looks at Horace asleep on a pile of rope and fish.
He's the one with his mouth closed.
Subito, subito, senor.
The fisherman approaches Horace.
Senor!
Now Madge approaches Jerry and Dale.
Listen, you two idiots. Alberta's as mad as a drunken toreador.
Where is he?
He's gone up to the room. Jerry, if you take my advice, you'll take the first plane back to London pronto.
Not until I've asked Mr. Bedini for his wife's hand. Do you think he'll accept me?
Madge stalks off. Now the hotel manager approaches Horace.
Mr. Hardwick.
Well, what do you want?
I regret to report, my dear sir, that your manservant has been arrested.
Bates?
Really?
Yes, sir. And he would have spent the whole night in jail if I had not bailed him out.
You don't mean it.
Now, Bedini sits shivering in a blanket on the bridal suite bed.
Come in.
Jerry, Dale, and Madge enter.
So, at last, the little birdies have come flying back to the rooster.
Sometime. Mr. Bedini, we want to explain this whole thing to you.
I will not listen to any excuses, not even the truth.
Jerry, Madge, I have the most amazing news. A few days ago, my invaluable manservant Bates.
Allow me to tell them, sir, please.
Quiet. Your turn will come later. A few days ago, my invaluable manservant Bates.
The needle has gotten stuck in a crack. You tell it, Bates.
Thank you, madam.
Bates and Horace trade a glare.
You see, Miss Dale, Mr. Hardwick thought you were a dangerous woman, and he asked me to follow you in case you did something dangerous.
Follow me?
Yes, miss. And in order to put you off the scent, I thought up many little disguises. This evening, I met Mr. Bedini and Miss Tremont, and fearing that they might recognize me, I turned my collar around like this.
He hides the notched front and back.
And very cleverly, I became a clergyman.
Bedini stands agape.
You are the one who married us.
Yes, sir.
Then we've never been really married.
Precisely.
Well, well, well. Mr. Bedini, what are you doing in this young lady's room?
They all look at each other and Jerry links arms with Dale. Later, Dale and Jerry slowly tap their way down the footbridge steps. He wears a top hat and overcoat, and she wears a white fur over her shimmering gown. At the bottom of the stairs, they dance together by the canal. As they pivot tightly, they scoop their heels up behind them, then break into an ecstatic dance. Jerry takes Dale in his arms and whisks her away, spinning them both around and around. Words appear. The end. A logo follows, showing an inverted triangle with a lightning bolt through it. Radio Pictures.